Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and I'm super excited to be joined by Matt Pittman today. And just before I introduce Matt, I want you to do a favor, if possible, please. Now, the favor is to go to your platform that you're listening to this podcast on and leave a review, hopefully a five-star review, because what that will do, it will help us reach more people and hopefully have a positive impact on more people as well. So that'll be truly appreciated. And also coming soon is the Wellbeing Wizard. Now, the Wellbeing Wizard, it will be a bit of a game changer for wellbeing in schools. So head over to wellbeingwizard.ai and you can join the waitlist. We're in the testing process at the moment, adding some more features, and that is about to launch very soon. Now, today's guest, Matt Pittman. Now, Matt is an expert in connection curriculum. He's published a book by that title, The Connection Curriculum, and I highly recommend everyone getting a copy of that book. It's available on all the platforms, Matt's personal website of mattpittman.com.au, and we'll put that in the show notes. Also on Amazon, you can get it from Amber Press, which was the publisher. Highly recommend getting that book. Now, connection has come up a fair bit in the last couple months of the podcast. On episode 51, we had Dr. Mark Williams on the podcast. We spoke about connection, and also Gavin McCormack. We also touched on connection in that episode in about 49, I think that was. Now, Matt, the reason why I want to get Matt on, because Matt is head of senior school. He's at Catholic Regional College, Caroline Springs, a secondary school in the western suburbs of Victoria. So he practices this on a daily basis. As I mentioned, he's written a book on it. And I really wanted to speak to Matt about how to implement connection across the school. And how do we know if we're successful? How do we know if we're successful in building a connected community? So we talk about ways that we can build connections with our students. We talk about how we can build connections with parents and also with colleagues as well. It's a fantastic episode. Highly recommend listening all the way through because there's lots of different practical tips and examples right throughout the episode. So without further ado, we'll get into the podcast. Matt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really cool to be here. I think there's a lot to talk about, and I am certainly a fan of you online, so it's good to meet in this space, and I'm looking forward to the chat.
Absolutely. Appreciate that, Matt. Very kind words, and yeah, same to you, and I've been really excited to have you on, particularly to talk about connection, and we'll get into that shortly. But first of all, I'm curious to know, how did you get into education? One of the questions I always love to ask, if it's a teacher workshop, in-person one, always curious to know how people ended up being in education. But first of all, did you always want to be a teacher or a school leader?
Not at all. No, I think it was, I was looking down probably something to do in, you know, the visual arts or digital animation, or, you know, around the time when I was coming up through secondary school, you know, Pixar was big and DreamWorks, and they were putting out, you know, these big movies that were huge for, you know, me as a younger person, but then as a teenager as well. Like, that just seemed like something that was really futuristic, something secure. And then that about the start of year 11, I think, if memory is correct, there was just a teacher I had that it just changed. I mean, I had a pretty good run at school. I enjoyed going to school. I didn't mind doing the work. You know, a bit of a mixed bag with results, but I genuinely enjoyed it. And then this class, like, it just took it to another level. And it wasn't just the work that was engaging. It was just being in that environment. And it, over the course of 12 months, whether consciously or subconsciously, I just started to think about being a teacher. And trying to create that kind of feeling for somebody else, and looking around, and, you know, teenagers all talk about, you know, how school's not where they want to be, and I kind of thought, well, in this class, this is where I want to be. So what if I could contribute to that? And And from there, it was, you know, I shifted my subjects around for year 12, and that became, you know, the drive. And then after that, it was off to do a gap year, and I worked in a boarding school to kind of test whether I had the ability to work with kids, you know, and if I could do it morning, noon and night at a boarding school in England, then I could probably do it between, you know, 8:30 and 5, and then off to university. And here we are. Like, I haven't looked back, and I don't, you know, and every now and then I think about, you know, is there something else on the cards? Is it, you know, watching really great friends and colleagues and professionals leave the job? But there's just, it's still, I've still got it there with me. Like, I'm hanging on, and I still feel that drive to create, you know, that classroom environment that I had that has put me on this journey.
That's really interesting. Was that one particular teacher?
Yeah, it was.
And you remember who?
I know exactly who they are.
Yeah. And do they know the impact that you had on them?
It's hard to say. I certainly haven't run into them. And I sometimes look, you know, and when I'm telling this story, you know, I was telling this at EduTech the other week as part of my presentation. I think about how I might get into contact with them, but no, I don't know. And I think that, like, isn't that a massive part of being a teacher too? Like, your impact, you feel such a small percentage of the impact, but it's huge. It's there. And I guess I'm not helping that out by keeping it to myself or just talking about it here, but it's,
yeah,
yeah, significant, because it's like, it's the thing that it brought me together with my wife. It's the reason we have, you know, the life we have. Like, all that one class kind of changed my life in, like, a non-cliche way.
Yeah, I love that. And mate, I'd reach out to them and let them know, because as, like, being in education, and sometimes we just don't know the impact that we have. We do have an impact. We hope we do, but unless we actually know, we sometimes we don't know. We hope we do, but I reckon if you let that person know, that could make their career. Who knows? Like, that could have a really positive impact on them, and showing appreciation. I reckon that'd be so cool if they actually knew the impact that you had, if they had you. Absolutely. So that's really interesting. And you mentioned EduTech then. That was we're recording this on June 16, 2025, to be specific. And that was last week, EduTech. What sort of themes, obviously EduTech gives it away with tech. There's a lot of technology and AI talked about, I assume.
Yeah.
Trends or anything that came up that surprised you at that conference?
Yeah, look, it's, I haven't had a lot of experience with EduTech. It was huge. Like, it was big, and it was a bit overstimulating in a really positive way. I think the things that I always focus on, being that, you know, my area of passion is connection and a focus on people, was just the disconnect between, you know, what the main focus of the conference is, you know, especially on the expo floor. It's, you know, a whole heap of incredible people. They're innovating and they're creating these products. But it was all talk about, you know, the product itself, the input, and then what the outcome would be, but not a lot about the actual person and who's in the middle. Like, you know, I'm all for having a great learning management system, and we certainly need to take on board all of these things that are happening with artificial intelligence, and we can't just turn a blind eye to this technology. But it just always strikes me, and it really hit me kind of on reflection flying back to Melbourne, that whole conference there wasn't a lot of talk about humans. And that to me is what the edu part is. It's about people. Like, these tools are not just about increasing a result or creating a desired outcome. If you take away the person from the outcome, like, what are we actually winning here? What was the point of having the education, you know, and that technology to support it? And so I a really great experience, and I'll be back again. And I loved the opportunity to be able to speak about something that maybe worked a little bit against the grain to what was what the majority of people were talking about, and such a wealth of experience. And I learned a lot about, you know, the technology and artificial intelligence and things too. But I just think a bit more focus on the people and the user. I think we've forgotten that there is a user, and it's kind of become, I hate the factory floor, you know, and schools being compared to a factory model, but we're getting too close now to where it's all just put a kid in, bring an adult out, and hopefully they've got all the things that we wanted to tick off. And that's just not what a functioning human is in my mind. It's certainly a disconnect between maybe what education is and what, you know, authentic learning is. And so there's a bit of a gap there.
That's interesting. And that's exactly one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on and talk about the connection, because you've written a book called Connection Curriculum, yes. which is fantastic. And we've had some previous guests, Dr. Mark Williams, which I think was episode 51, and before that, Gavin McCormack. And they both spoke about the importance of connection, and probably the most important thing in education is connection. Now, I believe that you obviously think that as well. So
yes.
Can I just, before we get into some ideas about how we can, I guess, create connection within our classrooms, how did you come to, I guess, be really interested in connection and realize it's such a powerful skill or tool, whatever you want to call it, to be able to embed in our classrooms?
So I guess it stems from just having access to the research to start. So being at multiple universities and a couple of degrees and things. I'm doing my Doctor of Education at the moment. And so I've got access to a lot of the reading. And I guess I started off looking at, you know, just ed leadership in general. And obviously there's a big drive to focus on your people. And that's what leadership is. You're there to influence and support and coach, mentor. And it all comes down to the people. And so that was where my first, you know, as a very young leader, which I'm very fortunate to have had that opportunity, but as a very young leader, jumping into that master's degree and then coming away with a real, I guess, renewed understanding of what it was to lead people and what that looked like, perhaps outside of like the teams I was already leading. And then I went and I was studying student wellbeing because I was trying to make a shift from curriculum to more of a pastoral role. And again, it was just this focus on people that when I went back to school, it was a focus on, you know, results and numbers and ranks. And then every time I'd get away to study, it would be about people again. And so I went, right, so I've got this leadership degree that's saying we should be focused on people. I've got a student wellbeing degree that's talking about people. And then I'm not actually sure why now, just at this moment, but I did an evidence-based teaching degree as well. And every time I looked at the data, I just couldn't get away from this lens of, you know, what's the person behind the numbers? And I just, my, across, you know, probably 6 or 7 years, my perspective about what I was doing and why I was doing it just shifted completely to this focus on things like student voice and agency and permission and identity. And it was, you know, I guess about a year and a half ago now, I sat down and I looked at all this stuff I had, and I came across the opportunity to meet with a publisher. And through that conversation, and it wasn't a lengthy conversation, I just started to realize this is all about connecting people to the world and to each other and to this perhaps lost art of learning. And then it's just been nonstop from there. Everything I do now is focused on, well, what's the connection behind it? And how does that increase you know, on the relationships we're already building, on the sense of belonging that students, staff, parents desperately need at this time in the world. And then how do we create a sense of meaning in what we're doing today, not meaning for the future? You know, what are we taking away that is going to have an impact now? And I think that's not very commonplace in schools. And so everything I look at, from staff retention to student, you know, students refusing to come to school or avoiding school, you know, behavior concerns and issues around management, all of that to me are problems that link to connection. And it just so happens it's the focus that we're not focused on. We're looking at how do we control kids that are misbehaving instead of looking at, well, what is that behavior communicating? We're trying to increase staff in schools by focusing on getting young people into universities to train as teachers, rather than looking at, well, what would retain some of our brilliant staff now and connect them back to the profession that they chose to be in potentially for 30 years. So there's just this misalignment, and I'm excited to be, you know, to have this lens to look through. And I think connection's everything.
Oh, and I think it's, when we talk about connection, like it is such a broad topic because it could mean so many things to so many different people as well. What's your, particularly in a school setting, what's your definition, or how do you look at connection within a school setting? Is it, do you put it in with teachers connecting with teachers, students connecting with students, teachers connecting with students? How do you look at it?
So I think that one of the things I talk about in the book is connection as a journey. And it's made up of three landmarks. It's made up of what I was saying before, relationships, belonging, and meaning. And within that, connection is whoever or whatever you can bring along in that journey with you. And so we're really good at establishing relationships. Like, I think that that's, for a very, very long time, that's been a focus of just good pedagogy. You know, have a relationship, know students' names, you know, greet them at the door, all of those things. But where we don't progress that connection, and where it just stays is at that relationship, is that's the problem. Like, we're now using those relationships to try and control the classroom a little bit, to maintain it, that power element. And it might not be on purpose, but we need to do more. And so connection to me in schools is then you take that relationship and you turn that into a sense of belonging, and you give a student or a staff member or a parent. And then that's the other thing as well. Like, it's a whole community. Everyone should feel seen, valued, and heard. And a school should reflect the community it serves. You've got basically mini versions of the adults coming in every day. And so, you know, why aren't we leveraging the actual adults? Why aren't we getting their opinions? Why aren't we respecting parents as the first teachers? But there's this opportunity to create a real sense of belonging around a school, you know, that a lot of people say has been lost since COVID, but we were drifting far away from it before then. It kind of just sped it up a little bit. And then that third landmark is just meaning. Again, as I was saying before, it's creating a bit of meaning for the student, connecting them to their work, where, you know, If your aim is just to complete an assessment, well, of course, the students are disconnected. They don't want to complete the assessment. They don't see the point of it. They don't know that, you know, sitting down and being under a bit of pressure or being able to work their long-term memory, that those things will be beneficial to them in the future. They're worried about right now. And right now, it's just something, a hurdle that they're being forced to jump over. And parents, give a bit of meaning to parents who are out of the loop, and, you know, the unreliable narrator that comes home every night and tells them what their day was like, that's all the information they have to go on. So when parents come in pretty fired up, it's I don't blame them sometimes. If they had a really rough go at school, then, and they're hearing that their child is having the same, that's going to set off some alarm bells. So they're going to come in ready to protect. Like, they're doing that out of care. And if we don't work with those parents and we don't give them a sense of meaning and a role, which shouldn't necessarily be the teacher's job, but this is the world we're in. Make the parents feel like they're a part of the process is super important. And then staff, just make them feel like they're needed.
Yep.
Give them back the meaning that has been lost in the noise of trying to reach, you know, standard X or, you know, achievement A. We've just lost that sense of belonging and that connection to meaning. We're still hitting that first landmark, but I think in schools it's about really looking at, well, what's the school's identity and what are we actually giving people to connect to?
Interesting. So, I mean, we could talk about parents, we could talk about students, teachers. Just how do you, as a leader and someone who's really passionate about what we're talking about here with connection, what are some practical ideas that you do as a school leader to connect the parents to the school, or you connect with the parents? What's some ideas or that you could share with us?
I think one of the, if we're going to go really, really simple and something that you can do tomorrow, I think it would be to get them in. We are very quick to send an email, very quick to make a phone call. Now then, you know, there's a scale of parent contact, and I would say email or direct message through an LMS might be a bit lower, but email's low, and then a little bit better than that is a phone call. A little bit better than that is a Zoom call, I suppose, or a video call. But the best opportunity for connection and for building genuine human understanding is to sit face to face. And I think most issues, you know, if we call them issues or concerns or whatever it might be, can be, as heated as it may start, they can be solved or resolved a lot quicker when we sit together, because that's what we're ingrained and trained to do. Like, humans are supposed to interact. Everything that we're doing to make it easier to connect as a result of the world we live in is actually making it harder for us to have those authentic interactions. And I think, you know, working with a parent to find a time that works where they can come in and sit down, even if that delays a conversation slightly, that is a technique that, or a strategy that is really, really important. It's the thing that's missing, you know, and it's something that we probably take for granted every day. We're in the classroom with the students, and so we have that human contact. You know, we're talking to a person, they're talking to us, or not talking to us, or whatever it might be the case. Like, we're getting that verbal, nonverbal interaction. And we don't have that with parents. And so, you know, again, are we really blaming the parents for being disconnected when we're not providing, you know, what our mind really wants? It really is yearning for that human to human contact. And in the case of building genuine understanding, face-to-face trumps everything. Nothing can be misconstrued in the room, because you've always got the chance to go, all right, I don't understand, you know, I don't understand, or, you know, the check for understanding is incredibly powerful, and that doesn't exist in an email.
Absolutely. I guess to build on top of that as well, like, not just from, I guess, dealing with issues, as we said, like that pop up, but inviting parent, like having like at the start of the year, like bringing all the parents and the teachers together. I remember doing that as a teacher, and they used to be great, and you used to build relationships for the rest of the year, like where you'd see them in the courtyard and you met somebody on that that night where you had a, might have, I don't know, depends if you have a couple drinks together or not, or it's a couple soft drinks, it doesn't really matter, but having that conversation And that can actually give you confidence to actually share more time together, even if it's just in a courtyard situation where you're walking past, but to acknowledge each other, call each other by their name. Because I think you just mentioned that before, like with students, knowing their name. I reckon that's one of the most powerful ways we can build connection in any situation, just knowing somebody and calling them by their name. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's one of your ultimate, like, I always say to the students in my classes, if after, 2 weeks, I don't know your name, there's always a penalty, like I have to do push-ups or something. And so the class are all for it, and they'll try and give me the wrong name, and but even that is us building a connection, and it makes you human. And I think it's the same thing with, the parent information night. It makes you, not Mr. Pittman, whatever, the head of school. It's, you're a person. You're standing up there. And, when we're communicating with somebody we can see, or we can have that physical interaction with, it makes a huge difference. It softens the edges. And we're an edgy society where we are on edge about everything. And yeah, they're little things that make a difference. So I think the biggest thing to move that initial relationship into, towards a sense of belonging is to then have more of those nights, not just start your year with it, but have more, because parents always have questions, and have your staff forum as well. How many staff meetings do you sit and just listen? Like, there has to be interaction. Like, a connection is not, A listening to B. It's A and B in partnership. And that means back and forward, to and fro, give and take.
Yeah.
And again, we try and do that with the students. And I work in a secondary school. So, that's a mixed bag depending on what the students are like on the day. Like, they might be up for a chat and they may not be, but that's okay. It's not their fault. But give the parents the chance, and usually they do want to chat. Sometimes we've got to, sweep them out the door at the end of some of these events.
Yeah.
Because we've got to lock up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just the little things. I think the biggest thing with connection, and the thing I always come back to, is that it sounds like a lot of work, but it's actually just doing a little bit more with what you've got. Like, you've got the foundation. It just requires just that tiny bit more effort for such a substantial return.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's that awareness as well. Just like, it's good in, like, as you say, it's not that hard. Like, a lot of things aren't that hard, but it's just having that awareness to actually do it as well. And that simply just being aware to call people by their name. Today, my goal is to call everyone by their name, because I'm one of my, I have to admit, one of my weaknesses is remembering people's names. I'm trying to get better at it. And just sometimes you just go back, yeah, g'day, mate.
Yeah, that's right.
The
kids, part. The kids go miss and sir.
Yeah,
they've got the perfect out. And I every now and then I'll throw in a, what's my name?
Yeah.
You only have to remember one. I've got to remember 27. Like, I think you can do it.
Yes, exactly. That's so funny. It's but yeah, it's just that awareness. And I think one thing that I really think is important is getting to know, whether that's a parent, fellow teachers, students. It's just even just getting one, or getting to know one thing about them, whether that's a student, what sport they play, and having that conversation about how they went on the weekend. And I remember that's one thing that I try to do with students, in particular when I was teaching, as I was PE. So just having that sports background and making that connection with them through sport, and knowing what most was very sporty school, so most of them did play something or were involved in something. Just asking about how they went on the weekend, and that was just a massive thing. And you sometimes, these are primary school kids, and like their eyes lit up, like, oh, he knows, like, it's amazing, and just makes such a huge difference. And oh, it's massive. And I think it's just, I think it's one of the most underrated things that we do in education. And I know that you know this, but mate, I just want to ask you also about some I called your mate then. I know your name's Matt, but
It's close.
yeah, it's right. Gone for the default. In the classroom, I can't remember who was. It might have been actually Dr. Mark Williams. He was explaining how a teacher had a lot of success in his maths class. This is secondary school, because at the start of each lesson, he would just have general conversation for 5 minutes, just in general life conversations, whether that was being a bit vulnerable, explaining, I don't know, whatever context it's in, like about maybe something that happened on the weekend, that they did, just general conversation. It could be positive things that they're sharing about their life, maybe what their kids and partner's doing. Just like some life lessons, some life conversations. And apparently that teacher had the students just engaged in everything he was saying, and that translated into the maths lessons, and they got the best results. What thoughts about how teachers can go about that?
I think vulnerability is your ultimate tool, and I think it's still seen as something that, perhaps not a weakness. That seems pretty strong, but I think it's seen as something not to do. But I mean, I did that exact thing this morning. I'm behind on some marking just because of life, and I put some results in, and I put them into the system wrong, so I've delayed it even further. And I came in and I just said, look, here's the situation. Like, basically I stuffed up, and so you're going to have to wait, a little bit longer, because now, everything's marked, but I've got to fix an error I made, and only I can fix it, and I need time to do it. And, I didn't get one student, and were year 10s. I didn't get one of them turn around and complain or anything. They were just like, yeah, fair enough. That's life. And I think the more you share that vulnerability and the more you talk about what life is like, the more, I guess, again, that meaning it adds to what you're doing, because it creates a humanness around the classroom environment. Like, this is not a robotic, interaction between me, an information delivery unit, and you, just some kind of receiver. Like, if you want that, you could get that. I have no doubt that AI is probably a better, if I'm thinking about the difference between learning and education, I'd probably say our AI could be a better instructor than me, but it'll never be a better teacher, because I'm human and I'm interacting at a human level. And I think when we look at learning as being a human need, whereas education has become kind of this artificial transaction, that's where I start to see, well, that's the importance of connecting with people. And it moves, and that's why we need to move beyond, like, establish their name, find their interests, chat to them often about this stuff. But then we've got to start using that information to change the environment and create that sense of belonging, because that's something the machines can't do.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when you've got that sense of safety and you've created, trust, psychological safety, you've got norms. I love norms over rules, because rules tell you what you can't do, and norms tell you, like, what the desired situation is. If you can create a sense of community with students and they understand and keep each other accountable of what they want to see, rather than, a consequence of because of something we didn't want to see, that's connection. And that's what the real world is like. I haven't been outside of teaching for the most part, but I know that a lot of industries, it's not about getting a slap on the wrist. It is about having some kind of restorative conversation. You go to HR and you talk about what happened and how do we move forward? Yeah, in schools, we talk about what happened and what kind of consequence is going to fix it. And so connection makes a school better at application to the real world. And if we're really looking at well, these kids are going to become our future adults, then why would we be running them through this gauntlet that doesn't reflect the world they're going to step into?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. It's really interesting. And just on the continue on the like the theme of connection, like with the whole, you've looked at a lot of research you mentioned before. What's the research into touch? Because obviously, when you shake somebody's hand, when you fist pump somebody, you give a high five, whatever it is, it does build that connection. But for some reason, there's that stigma or hesitancy to have any kind of physical touch, particularly with students, but I guess obvious reasons we don't have to go into, but there are still good ways to go about that, to build that connection, whether that's just a fist pump. And you see those viral videos that go out where the teacher's waiting at the door and they've got their personal handshake and whatever they're doing. But what's your view on that? And what does the research say about that, if there is any?
Yeah, I think there's tons of research that's, I mean, like even outside of school, like physical contact is another human need as well. Like it's, you know, from birth, that connection between an infant and their mother, like that's, there's no verbal communication or nonverbal, like it's just touch.
True.
And it's closeness. And that's the cornerstone of connection. And I think the thing that makes that obviously really difficult in schools is child safety.
Mm.
And you know, we could have a whole nother podcast on child safety. But I guess the reality of working in a school and for good reason, is that, you know, that physical contact is not appropriate. And I guess you can definitely shake a hand and you can high five and you can do all those things. But I think like the trade-off that I find is, you know, I'm 6'4", so I'm pretty tall compared to the students I work with. I mean, some of them are just as tall. It's a bit scary. But, you know, I find just as effective as a high five or the handshake or whatever it might be, is just getting down to their level. It's the contact, you know, or the removing of the power, I think is the thing we need to aim for. I think, you know, that closeness that could be transferred with a pat on the back, right? Which I mean could go either way, if I'm being really realistic. And again, if we're assuming that parents don't have a lot of information and then they hear, you know, what they hear when they get home and things are misconstrued, I think just like every single student I talk to at their desk, I'm either squatting down or I'm actually, you know, and for the most part, I'm suited up because of my role, but I'm dragging my knees on the carpet. Like I'm down to get at their eye level, to take away that power or that sense of power that I might have. And again, have this interaction at a human level. Like they might be 13, 14, whatever it is. And I'm obviously much older than that, but we're just two people trying to figure something out. And it gives that sense of partnership. I think it's the same with, you know, having a conversation with a student in distress or, you know, that is trying to calm down because they've got some big feelings that they're having, like just sitting side by side rather than face to face. Like I think your positioning of your body can account for some of that lack of physical touch. And it doesn't breach the student's safety. It doesn't create a situation that can be misconstrued. Like I'm sitting beside you. It's very non-threatening. I think they're the ways to connect and disarm, you know, somebody who might have the barriers up. And then if you can couple that with, you know, their name and an interest and a bit of vulnerability and all of these things that we've already spoken about, like you've got a recipe there to start creating, again, take that relationship to belonging and meaning, and then have that real genuine sense of connection that could end up, you know, leading to them being a teacher, you know, 20 years later, like myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, mate, it's so true. And yeah, I think that's some of those points you really, I think that's really important as well, because I'm not quite, I'm about what, 6'2", and I do primary school. Majority of the work that I do some high school, but when I was teaching, I was a primary school PE teacher, but also now I do a lot of stuff in primary schools, and you tower over these like 5-year-olds. So what, and you feel like silly standing at the front of the classroom, like you're up here and the kids have got their necks tilted back looking at you as well. And so your way, yeah, I always get on my knees or just sit in like on one of those chairs that seriously like about, I don't know, 15 centimeters off the ground that those kids sit in, just to be at that level, because it actually makes it easier to talk to them as well.
Absolutely.
Well, as that power that you mentioned, but it's just easy to talk to kids at that level. So for a start, like they're not tilting their necks and being uncomfortable for a start. That's
Yeah, no, that's right.
just makes it easier for you and for them as well. And yeah, I love those points there. And mate, I was just interested to know, with how do you go about, you mentioned earlier about the teacher and making them feel like they belong, because as we know that there's high levels of teachers leaving the industry after the first 5 years of teaching. Then I'm sure that there's different stages as well. One thing that I'll do with teachers if I'm doing a workshop, but also with students, is something called boundary of belonging. Pretty much, it's just a diagram of a circle, and I have it in that people want to belong, they want to feel included, and they want to feel happy. And then I've got an arrow pointing in with the word empathy. So just understanding that we all want to belong, we want to feel happy, and we want to feel included. What can we do to make sure that happens for other people? So I think if we can create an environment where we all understand that everyone wants to belong, what can I do to make sure others feel like they belong? I think that's a really important skill. How do you think about helping your teachers feel like they belong, and what sort of strategies do you use personally?
With staff, it's that building that sense of belonging is about it's about empathy and it's about empowerment. I think it's if you've got a solid base of trust and you can have an honest conversation, I think you've got to push them into the driver's seat a little bit. I think as a leader, you're often come to for advice. And I think that offering that advice can sometimes be to the detriment of the connection, because it shifts again. They're shifting that, back and forward towards a transaction. They're coming to you for something, and you're offering it up, and away they go. And so I think when you want to build a sense of belonging with staff, it's giving them this the space and the permission to take control of the conversation. And so instead of providing advice, it's just asking the next question. And so, when they come to you with a concern, for example, it's instead of giving the solution, even if it's really obvious, and you've got to do a lot of biting of your tongue, I think, but it's just about then, well, the first question is, how do you feel about that? Or where would you like to go? Or what does the optimal outcome look like for you? And you just keep directing that back to them. And so you're kind of playing tennis with this conversation, and you just keep hitting pretty hard volleys back at them to see what they can do. And so one of my methods is PE. So we're going to start drifting into a tennis thing now. But I think you just return the ball back to them. You put them in the driver's seat, whichever kind of metaphor you want to go for. But they're the ones who have control, and you're coaching them to the solution that they already have. They just don't realize they've got it. And you're adding to their expertise. And I think as a leader, you have to respect your staff's experience, whether that is a day or, 10 years. They've got something there. It has to be personal to them, because otherwise they won't have that sense of meaning. And you leverage the relationship you've got and create a space for them where they feel they're coming to you because you listen. Become kind of like a mirror. We all have those chats in the car to ourselves. especially when we've had a tough conversation, you talk your way through it and you go, ah, I should have said that. That's a brilliant line. So you just become that for them. And sometimes it's venting, but as long as there's a practical outcome after the vent, then you've provided that, what they need more than an answer or a direct answer that is coming from your experience. So if I'm coaching a staff member, it's not about the meaning I get from that interaction is not about how successful my suggestion is. It's about how successful I am at helping them get to their answer. And if we can do more of that, then it creates that collegiality that might just, and it's a big might because there's a lots of other pressures too, but it might just help that staff member to get over that hill and prep them for the next one because it's just a constant uphill kind of race teaching. But it's give them the time and actively listen, which I think teachers are pretty good at actively listening until they get the solution pops into your head. And it's just about basically shutting that solution up and going, how can I help them come to the solution that they need, not the one that I need almost.
Got you.
And
That
creating time.
that's a skill though, isn't it? Like
No,
from
absolutely.
your point of view, like as a school leader, that would not come naturally to some people. But what I'm hearing there, that would take practice to have that ability to ask those questions to get the teacher, for example, thinking about solutions and, as you say, like they're playing that tennis match, just going back and forth with those questioning. How did you develop those skills? Did you go through like a course to manage that, or is it something that you just picked up yourself?
I think it's probably a mix of things. It's definitely, I've read some pretty good books on coaching and there's some really good stuff on YouTube and whatever it might be. But it's also just horrific trial and error. Like I've gotten it wrong a lot. And I certainly, I was very lucky to have leadership opportunity, like a really formal leadership opportunity. I think at the end of my second year. And so I'd only just kind of gotten teaching, well, as much under control as you can by the end of your second year. And then I had a huge team. Like I had the health and PE team that I was leading.
How old were you then? Was it 23, 4, or was it?
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. And so, an incredible team of just absolute legends, but some of them had been, doing it for much, much longer than I had. And now I was, I had to fly the flag and go, well, here's the direction. And so at the start of that, it was just, I thought or the image of a leader that I had drummed up was somebody who had the answers. And I think over time, even with a supportive team, you can just see that that is not getting the results and that you're not actually leading anyone anywhere. You're just fixing spot fires. And so, with a bit of research and a bit of, professional learning and whatever it might be, and just trial and error, that's sort of where I've come to this realization today that, my job is to build the capacity of everyone, that sits under me in my portfolio. And I say to my staff, like, my job is to create the challenges for when, this role is up again. And if there's, I don't, whatever, four people that really put me through my paces, if I, I want this role again when it's up, then I've done a really good job. Because it's, a leader is only as effective as their team. And so if I'm not connecting with them and building their capacity and finding out what drives them on a daily basis, then I'm not getting, I'm not adding any meaning to my role, and I'm certainly not building anyone up to be the successor. And I think succession is a real issue in schools, and it's probably one of the things that is leading to disconnect as well. I think it's nobody want everyone sees it as their position. And this is just the role I'm in now. And if I happened to lose it for whatever reason, well, that would there'd be some pretty hard reflection on it. But it's not my role. You know, it's not my position, I should say, but it's the role I'm in at the moment. And I think, yeah, that's how I work with staff. I think it's everybody wants to feel like they have an impact. And so it's my job to give them permission to make that impact.
It's really interesting. Just, really enjoying this conversation. There's so many takeaways I've learned, heap personally. How do you know when you've actually got, well, maybe not nailed it, because I think we can always improve whatever we're doing in anything. But how do you know if you have got a well-connected staff or a well-connected school? Is there any measurements that you look at, or is it more observational? How people look? Are they happy? Are they conversing with each other? How do you actually know if you have a connected school?
It's really, really, really hard. I think it's one of those things where humans are very good at seeing when something's not working.
Yeah.
Like we're almost wired in that direction. And connection's not very tangible. But I think it's, you know, if you want to go down the data route, then you'd be looking at your attendance. You'd be looking at engagement. You'd be, you know, all the data that we already have. Like I think one of the things, if I'm thinking back to last week, so Dr. Selena Fisk spoke at EduTech and she's brilliant. And, you know, one of her points was we don't need to find new data. Like we've got a ton. We've got all the data we need. We just need to look at what the story is behind that data. And connection is one of those storytellers. It's in. And I think if you want to look at data, then yeah. I mean, if you've got attendance at extracurricular, like school events is a big one, because those events are all about connection to the school identity. It's dressed up in maybe a swimming carnival or an athletics carnival, or, you know, a faith-driven school, it might be, you know, your big connection day, whatever it might be. It's attendance on those days when there's no classes. So your students who are driven by the academics, they might not see the purpose of it. Your students who are already a bit on the fence about attendance, well, it's not a day that classes are on. Do you know what I mean? Like it tests your community and it shows you, and I think you can see it in staff too. Like staff don't have to get in the pool and swim.
No.
If you have a ton of absences, people calling in sick on your swimming carnival, that's a sign of disconnection. Because that day is not about the staff. It's about providing an opportunity for something, you know, that builds community with your school. We just happen to be living on a big giant island, like knowing how to swim isn't too bad either. But it's, you know, it's in those moments when you really see, do we have a sense of community at this school? And if that sense isn't there, well, what are we doing to actually attract it? Like what do we give the students and the parents and the staff to connect to? And I think, you know, school identity is a big chapter in the book, because we're very good at focusing on individual identity, but not the school. And if you're not giving people something to connect to, then we can't expect them to be connected. But it is in the smiles. It's in, you know, the students that come back. They're a huge subjective indicator. When students come back to visit, that's a choice they have made as potentially a young adult, a time out of their day to come back somewhere they never have to visit again. Or, you know, students who come back and are employed, who contribute to school events, who come back with their siblings, Those are big indicators that you're on the right track. Staff retention is obviously a big one. If you can hold on to staff, and no school is perfect, and the challenges are there and they're real, and no school is above those challenges. But if you can hold on to staff for year on year, and only lose them when there's great opportunities. So you've built that capacity of your staff so much so that they're going off now to make changes in another community. They're all things that I think lend themselves to some kind of measure of connection. But ultimately, it's a feeling. If your students are happy to be at school, you can tell. If your staff are happy to be in their place of work, if parents, are full of praise, and also, when they're not full of praise, they're coming in, respectful and wanting to work together, that's when you're on the right track.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And I agree with you as well. It's like this. I'm just thinking back when I was teaching. Like people, there was hardly ever a position that came up. Well, I was at Emmanuel Primary School. I was a Lutheran school here in Adelaide, and like it was really. I loved it. I really enjoyed my time there. And you actually just talking about that then, I can't hardly remember when anyone actually left. Like I mean, they did, but none that stands out for any negative reason. They either became a principal at another school because they were deputy principal when they moved up, as you mentioned. And I was reflecting, very lucky. But yeah, it's really interesting point of view that you just make about how we can, I guess, assess if we are building connected environments. And mate, I really appreciate your time tonight. And or we are recording this tonight, but you could be listening to this time. But mate, where could people find your book, Connection Curriculum? Because I think it will build on from what we've spoken about in our conversation here. Where can people find that?
So the Connection Curriculum, it's published by Amber Press, so you can definitely grab it straight from them, off the website. If you purchase a copy from my website, which is just mattpittman.com.au, I'll sign it and I'll write a little note in every one that I send off. But other than that, it's everywhere. You can buy a book online pretty much. And there's the odd bookshop that has it. If you request it, they'll order it in. It's always good to see it on a shelf. But yeah, it's everywhere. It's all over the world. I'm very fortunate to, I guess, have written a book to start with, which still shocks me, but that it's out there and being read, it's a really rewarding kind of cherry on top.
It is. I've been fortunate enough to write a book a couple of years ago as well. Like it was published through Wiley, and like it was the strangest thing ever. Like I never thought I'd be writing a book, and just to see it like on a shelf and actually holding it, like it was the craziest thing ever. So I get that feeling that you do get from publishing your book, and I think everyone thinks well would like to write a book, but having that opportunity like it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably get it, and highly recommend everyone get a copy of that book, because I think connection, is one of the probably the most important thing we can, I guess, embed in a school or in life in general, really. It's such an important thing and it leads to so many benefits. And mate, you mentioned your website then at mattpittman.com.au. We mentioned the book. We'll put all these in the show notes so people can get hold of those resources as well. And just one thing with your book, do you do, I know that you're a principal, like school leader, head of school. So do you work with other schools, or how do people interact with you with your, since you've got a book? Because often that brings opportunities.
Yeah, it does. It's definitely something that I get asked a lot. Look, my focus is the school and working with the team, and I guess, I'd love to be able to do everything, but it's just not on the cards at the moment. Look, I mean, people get in contact with me through the website, and I'm always happy to help out where I can. At the moment I'm stepping into, speaking at conferences, and that gives me, an opportunity to, for lack of a better word, connect with a whole heap of educators. So yeah, I'll be at the National Education Summit in Melbourne, and I'll be up at the ASL conference in Sydney a little bit later in the year. And I guess it's these opportunities to connect face to face that are really rewarding. But Yeah, no consultancy or anything at the moment, but I'm certainly keen to help. So questions and concerns, and I get some really interesting kind of problems that come through, and they edge me towards, it's like that, it's like a magnet. But no, I'm very happy working with the kids at the moment.
Absolutely, mate. It's awesome. And yeah, it's great that you are people are able to reach out, even though that you are teaching, but still willing to help. That's amazing. So really appreciate that, mate. And thanks for coming on the podcast.
No worries at all. Thanks for the invite. It's great.